Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. The gushing headline in the Sunday Business Post back in 2017 said passage guns for major share of Irish nursing home market. US-backed healthcare provider could potentially own 1,200 beds with €40 million in turnover. And that was 2017. We first heard about Passage Healthcare back in January when a listener pointed out that the HICWA report on one of their two nursing homes opened in Ireland, Sally Park in Tallaght in Dublin, found severe and dangerous fire safety risks. The company, when this was pointed out publicly, the company said that to bring it up to fire safety standards would cost over €1 million in Sally Park, and they promptly shut Sally Park down. It's now closed, unfortunately, for the residents. Hopefully they all got sorted out with other nursing homes. And then the second nursing home they own in Ireland is called Lucan Lodge, which is in the centre of Lucan there in West Dublin. And again, the HICWA report, I was just rereading it again there this morning, the HICWA report, they were found to be not compliant in the latest HICWA report on a significant number of issues, over 20 different issues, including staffing levels and including, again, fire safety. Now, we've asked HICWA, and we've regularly gone back to HICWA to see, have the changes been made? Because, as we discovered with Sally Park, after 9 months, despite their promises, they didn't make any changes demanded by HICWA to fire safety. And when HICWA went back to them, recently, as I said, and it entered the public domain, and people like Charlie O'Connor from Tallaght took it up. Sally Park admitted that they couldn't bring the fire safety regulations, and you can imagine the importance of fire safety regulations in a nursing home. And now we were in touch with Lucan Lodge. We had one of the directors of Passage Healthcare. They're an American company. They say they're one of the biggest in the world, and they say one of their directors, the other director is Ronan Collins. His name is Ronan Collins. He's, by the way, he's neither a medic or a radio broadcaster, just in case people get confused. Ronan Collins, as I pointed out on the day when we went through their CVs, is a businessman and an investor. 2 days ago, we were told this morning, not by Passage Healthcare and not by Lucan Lodge, who we've been in touch with, we were told that Lucan Lodge has gone into examinership. In other words, they are in financial difficulties. Now, I don't know if the residents and the relations of those in Lucan Lodge have been told this. We've been trying to get a statement from Passage Healthcare. This is the company that arrived in Ireland with big ambitions of 1,200 beds, at least within a few years, and 40 million turnover. They now have 73 beds. And a damning HICWA report, which we hope they've addressed, but we can't get an answer from them. And then when we did ring Lucan Lodge an hour ago to ask what was going on, because we couldn't get an answer from either Sheila King or anyone in the head office of Passage Healthcare, we were told by the person who answered that, yes, the nursing home was in examinership, and they hope to find a new owner. So I don't know if residents and their families are aware of that, but they say they hope to find a new owner. And obviously, if a new owner is found, well, then we presume the residents will not be affected. But does the new owner have to do the fire safety improvements? And why is Lucan Lodge, this a member of this incredible multinational called Passage Healthcare, why has Lucan Lodge gone into examinership? Hopefully we can find out by the end of the programme. joe@rte.ie, 51551 is our text number. Now, let's help some people. Susan Griffith. Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How much was the bill initially, Susan?
5,500 and a bit more.
5,000? $517.84.
Yes.
It's like the cash call on News Talk. 5517 84. And what was your reaction when you got the bill?
Well, my reaction was that it couldn't be right.
Okay.
But I've had nothing but stress and worry trying to sort it out and trying to get onto them and press this, press that, buttons. And then I sent emails and backwards and forwards. And it went on and on and on. I've had at least 2 weeks now of it.
Okay, well, tell us what you've been through, Susan, before you contacted us. What have you been through? You got this bill for €5,500. Have you ever got a bill of that magnitude before for your electricity?
Absolutely not.
Are you sure? Are you running? Susan, are you running a restaurant or a data centre?
Well,
are you?
You'd think I had a B&B or something, or a hotel. But I don't even, I don't cook on it. I don't have a tumble dryer.
Okay.
I don't use it.
Okay, your line's going in and out with me there, for, unfortunately.
Oh.
So, just, and you tell us, we'll try and get a better one as we go along. But you say you're 80 years of age. I live alone. As you say, you don't use electricity for cooking or clothes drying. And what in the range have your previous bills been, Susan? No, she's gone from me in a second. We'll try and get it back. But Susan has been through some litany of stress in the last. Now, nobody, we trust our Electric Ireland and the ESB. Surely we have to trust them. And we trust them for a long, long time. And I presume the bill will be sorted, and I can tell you the bill was sorted, but it was only sorted in the last few hours, despite Susan's incredible efforts, which she will come back and tell us about hopefully when the line gets better. Adrian Clark. Adrian, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
How much was your, is it, who is Electric Ireland, I presume, is it?
Electric Ireland, yes.
Okay, how much was your bill?
Now, our bill is for the year, Joe, but it's 10,000, 11,000.
Okay, and what do you think of the bill?
We paid them 5,000 before that.
Okay.
As they underestimated our readings. So in the last, we'll say, year and a half or 2 years, we paid them 15,000.
And do you
That's
think,
what our bill is.
Well, is that a fair representation of your consumption?
No. It should only be about 3,000 a year.
No, and I'd ask the same questions I asked Susan. Are you running a data centre or a small cafe?
We have nothing. We don't have heat pumps. We don't have water pumps. We don't have electric gas. We don't have any of those things. We don't have sewage pumps. Nothing like that. It's just a small four-bedroom bungalow. All we have is storage heaters.
Which are supposed to be economically efficient.
Yes, the argument is, but we're also charged. At night, we've noticed, we're charged night rate. It could be up to €400 in August.
Okay.
And they're off.
So the bill, you say your bill is up to four times what it should be, you think?
Yeah. Now, we rang Electric Ireland.
Okay.
We were told 12 months ago not to, by two supervisors, not to pay a penny. This is wrong. But they had a year to check it out and look at it. They came back and said everything is hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. The ESB put 2 meter checks on our meter box, and they're saying it's perfect. Electric Ireland and I was saying it's perfect. And so, what are we looking at paying €10,000 a year for electric?
So there's no budge. They're saying it's correct.
Yeah. And funny enough, we had gone to our solicitor last week, and it was actually our solicitor that recommended we need to get on to Joe Duffy. And then she rang us an hour ago, and she just said Joe Duffy is doing this on a heat show today. So that's why we're on.
But Adrian, and it's Joe at RT.ie 51551. But Adrian, are you saying you've run into a brick wall with Electric Ireland?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a letter here in front of me where I have knocked up 10 hours in the last year of phone calls. They're giving me compensation of €1,240. I refused. I've been hung up on numerous times. Mm-hmm. If you want to speak to a manager, it should be within 3 to 5 working days that they ring you back. I have it on here twice. Once it was 3 weeks. And the only way I could get through to a manager there was I said, I'm not proud of it, but I said, what do you want me to do? Self-harm? And then all of a sudden, within 2 minutes, there was a manager on the phone to me.
But you're still, what is your outstanding bill according to Electric Ireland now?
€1,000.
And you say you don't owe it?
Of course we don't. But we've been paying our bill right up to date for the last year and a half. Then they came up with €5,000 underestimated just after COVID. So we paid that. And then the bills started just going crazy. Okay. And it was like...
Now, remember, a lot of bills, obviously, in the last 18 months went crazy with the oil prices and gas prices. You know that.
But, I know that, absolutely. Nobody... You see, Electric Ireland told us, they said it themselves. They said it was crazy. She said, the lady that was looking after it said she'd look into it. And another supervisor said the same. Don't pay anything, he said. We must owe you because we paid them $5,000 that we never owed them anyway.
So you should be in credit with them, that's your point.
We should be in credit. Yeah, we already gave them a clear $5,000 a year and a half ago.
Wow. Okay.
And now we get hit with another $10,000. So we've given them $15,000 plus what we paid in the last 2 years. So we probably
Why didn't you take the advice that you say of two people from Electric Ireland and maybe DSB, I don't know who the two people were, that they said don't pay it?
Go on.
Didn't they say you don't pay it?
They said, no, we didn't pay it. We didn't pay it. But that's what we would have been paying. That's what our bill should be. But we paid $5,000 straight up for the underestimate a year and a half ago. And then these bills just got crazy. So when we rang Electric Ireland, the supervisor said, don't pay the bill. And two supervisors said, don't pay the bill. And I had that on paper.
Yeah, but why? So why did you pay the bill?
No, we didn't pay the bill, Joe. It's still outstanding. We paid about $1,000 there 2 weeks ago. So we just felt that we're just going to have to start paying it. And then you come on this morning and here we are.
Okay, well, let me go back to Susan and start this debate. Thanks, Adrian. Stay with us, please. Susan Griffith again. Your opening bill for your modest household where you don't use electricity for cooking or clothes drying, you live alone. Your opening bill was $5,517.84.
Correct.
Okay. So what electricity do you use in your household, Susan?
Well, I have a whole file of old bills here. Okay. What do I use? I use lights.
Yeah.
I have storage heaters, and I don't have them on very much, but I do have them.
Okay.
But that's usually shown separately. It's got a separate meter. I gave them the meter readings anyway, after all this kerfuffle.
And Susan?
And the stress has been something terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, let's hope we can...
It's still. I know I don't owe $5,000, but it's having to try and deal with them.
Yes,
they didn't immediately make things right. And then the lace thing is, they were giving my money off this and off that, and giving me allowances for all the times that I telephoned them, or I wrote them the contacts. I think there were 11. They were giving me 440 off that, and they were giving more off for something else. But the thing is, where did they get their new basic sum?
Okay, well, let's go through it. You're phoning them all the time. You have to phone them. Is that it, Susan?
No, I don't phone them because that's a waste of time.
Okay, and how do you contact them?
Email.
Well done. And can you contact them by snail mail? Can you put a stamp on an envelope and write, send
it
somewhere?
Well, you could, but I didn't think they'd open it.
Okay. So, you rang Electric Ireland 11 times. What was the response?
Or I've sent contacts to them. The latest response, thanks to Joe Duffy program, they sent me a new bill, which was for $1,000, which was also too much, I would have thought.
Well done, yeah.
And they also, I had a direct debit, and if they'd taken, my bank account wouldn't have supported it. And also, why are they saying I was overdue to pay if I had a direct debit?
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Now, this is what we've got. Okay, you're 11 foot. This is like that song, D-I-V-O-R-C-E, Susan. You know where Dolly Parton replies to the child and says, this is for your 11 phone calls, which you made to Electric Ireland, okay? They are allowing you an amount of
440, I think. Was it
440 euro. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. For for based on the new readings, we provide a replacement invoice which is down to 1,355.46, down from over 5,500. Well, that's good. 440 will knock off for the 11 phone calls you made. Without prejudice and due to service breaches, I'm awarding you, Susan, 440 in charter payment for the 11 times you contact Electric Ireland to resolve the issue, which will be applied to your bill. 440 gone. The delay in billing. For the delay in issuing the bill on your account, I'm offering to write off 30% of your remaining balance, which equates to 36,618. Leaving you with an outstanding balance of 640.82. So the bill has gone, as if by magic, from 5,517.84 to 640.82. It's dropped by nearly 85%. Now, you still say that's too much.
Well, I asked them to let me know what they'd based that on.
Yes.
And also they mentioned things about payment, but I had a direct debit up to now, but I cancelled that. I went into the bank and cancelled it because you wouldn't know what they'd do.
And you're reading, for example, in the last 6 days you've done a reading, have you not?
I have.
And that came to what?
Well, there's two readings now, and it's 11849, and for the storage heaters, 09613. And I don't know what that's deducted from, but they haven't shown me how they've estimated the new bill.
Now, my question to Electric Ireland would be: given that they started with a figure of €5,517.84, which put the heart crossways in you, Susan, and as you say, led to a number of weeks of stress, your numerous phone calls, you're trying to get through. They've now knocked that down to 640.82. Why don't they say, as a gesture of goodwill, the whole lot has gone in the bin?
Yeah.
Would you be happy with that?
Yes, I well, it'd be something. But it won't get over the stress totally, but it would help.
Okay, so we'll go back to Electric Ireland. Given that you've chipped and you've chipped and you've chipped away at the 5.5... And we got
I've just been on a diabetic support group, and we've had a talk on stress.
Okay.
A very good course in colic.
What you're saying, Susan, is when you raise the issue of stress, you're being deadly serious.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll get back on to the Electric Ireland. For the delay in issuing the bill, on your account, I'm offering to write off 30% of your remaining balance, which equates to 366, leaving you with an outstanding balance of 640. On behalf of Electric Ireland, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise again for the delay issuing the bills on your account, the large bill you received on the back of erroneous meter reading, and any distress. Now, they say this in fairness to them, Susan, and any distress that this has caused. But you left him in no doubt that you were in stress and distress.
Yeah.
Okay, I can hear it in your voice there. What are you going to do with the bill of 640.82?
Well, I'm waiting to hear further.
Okay. And have you ever, Susan, have you ever had to take on a utility company before like this?
Not on Joe Duffy, but I had another problem with ESB, but I thought of that, or funnily enough, somebody knew somebody and it got sorted.
Okay, but like ESB, and I know they've been semi-privatised, and we've Electric Ireland and Air Grid and the competition, but like ESB are one of the most trusted names in Irish life, so to speak, and we trust when we get a bill from them that we shouldn't have to get out the calculator and get out the phone and get out our stubby pencil and go through everything. And the reason you jumped, and thankfully you didn't jump too high because of the stress it caused, was when you saw the bill was 5,517.84. Adrian Clark, are you anyway buoyed up by Susan's successful crusade? I know it's coming down this morning to six four. It's some achievement, by the way, Susan, but it's not over yet.
No, it's not over yet.
Yeah, and while it's on you, I've had the stress for a year and a half. So I've been hung up. I've been all here from Electric Ireland. They've hung up on me 12 times. I have the note here where I was told by the supervisor that not to discuss with anyone else. She was taking care of the problem and not to pay the bills while the matter was being investigated.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, go on, Joe.
Why? I don't want to, please, no names or anything, or even dates. But why would someone hang up on you, Adrian?
Well, it was going nowhere. I mean, I'm ringing.
Did you hang up or they hang up? They hung up.
No, they hang up. They hang up.
And what was their last, what was their final words to you?
Well, it was just, it's finished, but what can you do? We just assumed then we're just going to have to start paying it.
Okay.
But the problem is, we don't have a problem paying the 10,000. It's paying another 2,500 every 2 months, you know. That's the problem. And then we've lost our rates as well. We're on a higher rate. We're not getting any discount rates. We've lost our loyalty rates because the balance was not clear. There was a removal of discount on this account because no payments were being made. But we were told not to pay.
Now, Susan,
yeah,
you were. I asked you, did you read your meter? Like, I don't know if you live in a modern, you know.
No, I had to climb up a ladder to read the meter.
You did not now.
Well, I had somebody holding the ladder.
Yeah, thank God.
But I had to go up, I think it's 9 or 10 feet up.
And could a person holding the ladder have gone up the ladder?
No, because he didn't have his glasses.
Susan, I know you're hale and hearty, but you're 80.
Yeah.
Climbing up a ladder.
Yeah. If you don't climb a ladder, you can't fall off one.
Mm.
And when you got to the top of the ladder, I know your comrade in arms, holding the ladder, he hadn't got his glasses, so he wouldn't be able to read the meter. Were you able to read it clearly?
I was.
And did you shout the reading down to your colleague?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
So you had a system.
Yeah, but then they said that wasn't good enough. I'd have to go and read it again.
Ah, no!
With a newspaper.
No!
With the date on.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Explain that to me, Susan.
So I'd have the telephone in one hand, the newspaper in another, and I'd be balancing on the top of the ladder.
And what, they expected you to be like a Dublin firefighter to wrap one foot?
So then I had a very, very good neighbour, Kevin, and he came and read it then another day.
Thank God for Kevin. And did Kevin go up the ladder with the phone and the newspaper, the Evening Herald?
He did.
And what, you hold the newspaper up to the meter? And it's like, God help us, Susan. Do you remember back in the old days of the 80s and the 90s when there'd be kidnappings in Italy and all that? And they'd hold the photograph of Patty Hearst or whatever, or wherever they were. They'd sit there to prove that they were still alive. They'd sit there with the local newspaper held in front of them. So the ESB, Electric Ireland, wants people to go up a ladder with a phone in one hand. And do you remember what newspaper did you use, Susan?
I used a slightly out-of-date Irish Times.
Okay, which is a broadsheet, which can be difficult to hold.
Yeah.
This is not funny, Susan. This is not funny.
Mm.
Did you look down when you were up at the top of the ladder?
I don't know what I did. I was keen to get down.
Adrian.
Yes?
Have you got the Connacht Tribune there? To get up the ladder.
Yeah, I've had to do the same.
This is a
joke. It's today, Jeff.
Please do not take anything from me saying 80, Susan, because you're brilliant, and people at 90 are brilliant and 100 are brilliant. But at 80, Electric Ireland asked an 80-year-old woman to climb a ladder to read the meter, which you promptly did while our friend, her de-spectacled friend, held the ladder. You climbed back, you shouted down the figure to him. He then jotted it down without taking his hands off the ladder, I hope. You you descended the ladder and then you rang in the number and then Electric Ireland said, no, you're going to have to go back up the ladder. But this time, this time, you must have a phone in one hand, i.e. a camera, and an Irish Times in the other. And you have to shimmy up that ladder, using your chin maybe on each rung, Susan. But you luckily knocked into Kevin next door. Was it Kevin?
I did.
Good old Kevin. Saint.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
He's a saint.
He's the best neighbour in the world.
Saint Kevin.
And Sheila, his wife.
Well done. Saint Kevin, Saint Sheila. Well done. So, Susan, how are you now? Like, I think,
well,
by the way,
I'm all right,
Susan,
because I'm all the better for talking to Joe Duffy.
Okay, thank you. Now, Susan, how many rungs were on that ladder, do you remember, that you climbed up? Six, seven?
Six, I suppose.
Six, okay.
It's a step ladder, it's a wooden step ladder.
I know. For each of those six rungs, between six and seven, I'm asking the ESB to deduct €100 for each of those rungs you had to climb up twice, while you, Kevin. So that brings your bill. We'll get on to Electric Ireland now. That should bring your bill to 0000. It should.
Well, I think they should send me a piece of paper to tell me that.
Okay, I know that. We'll give them a ring around. We'll give them a ring about the rung. And two rungs do not make a right, but two. Susan, you're great.
Well, you're great.
I am not. I do nothing. Just
and John, who did the research.
John O'Reilly, yeah, he's great. He's great. He's great. Now he'll be. But again, the point still is, we want to know from Electric Ireland how many bills are estimated, how many people have been able to, like Susan, been able to persevere over 11 phone calls to challenge the bill, and how many bills have been adjusted downwards, not upwards, downwards.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're a member of the Diabetic Association online, is it online?
Well, no, it's a diabetic support group.
Support group,
right. In Ballincollig. With Ellen, she's really good.
Great. And are you a member of any other groups or organisations? Or?
Oh, I probably am, lots of things.
Yeah, well, I see. What part of the country are you in, Susan? I don't want you.
I'm in Kinsale.
In Kinsale. Well, there's a brilliant retained fire service in Kinsale and all around Cork. I'm sure they're looking for people that are able to shimmy up ladders at the speed.
Okay, I'm the woman.
Okay, you're the woman, okay. And Susan,
right.
Susan, you're active and you get out and about.
I do.
Okay. And when you say you don't use electricity for cooking or tumble dry, do you cook on a gas, do you?
No, and I have an oil-fired cooker.
Oil-fired, like an aga or?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, great.
An aga.
Great. And your house is warm, I hope.
Well, only in bits, small bits of it.
Okay. And did the government?
I'm afraid to plug in a bit of heat for 5 minutes now.
Don't be. You stop. Don't be. And remember, Electric Ireland do not. Well, they're adamant about this. They do not cut people off. They're adamant about this. But anyway, for your ladder climbing, for your perseverance with the 11 phone calls, they took money off. For the fact that we raised the issue of direct debit, they took more money off. And then they took more money off again this morning, and now it's down to 640.82, and we're heading down that ladder, Susan, to zero.
And I'd like them to send that to me.
Yes, in writing. Yes, of course, of course. Okay, Susan, we keep in touch. Good
morning,
Margaret.
Thank you very much,
Susan Griffith.
Thank
you, Susan. You're great. Susan Griffith in Kilsale and Adrian Clark, keep in touch as well. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715
815. And Joe at rt.ie. Back to the reaction to the first phone call we got 2 days ago about obsessive compulsive disorder. Carol has contacted. Carol, good afternoon. And one thing that struck me over the last few days, Carol, it is a very lonely illness, isn't it?
It is, Joe. Yep, definitely. Well, you kind of feel isolated. You think, when I was young, of course, I didn't realise what I had. I thought it was normal. I thought it was normal behaviour because I didn't display the obsession with cleanliness like that, you know, even as a teenager, I began to hear about OCD. It was constantly washing hands. I'd seen it in members of my family. Yeah. I didn't have any of that. None of it. Okay. My thing was basically, as a 10, 11-year-old, waking up in the middle of the night, having to get out of bed and go and check for jewellery that either my mother or grandmother would have given me. Not only had to check it was there, I had to touch it. And if I didn't touch it, they would die. That's how I felt.
Wow.
So I'd get back into bed, and if I felt I didn't touch it, I had to do that back out again. You see, you can understand, like, when you're older, like, it was like an intrusive thought. But that was basically at night time. Mm. I would wake up several times. I was always wrecked a lot of times in school then, the day after, because of this having to get up. More so, like, I never had the cleanliness thing, you know, the one that was completely washing. But I did, I suppose, you know, have to have everything. Like, cushions had to be always very straight, stuff like that. Mm. But I didn't have the constant wash my hands. But as I was older, my thing was going out. It was a nightmare leaving my house because I have to go back repeatedly, check the iron is off. Now, that's normal. A person might go back and check once.
Yeah.
I would check it was off, back in the car, back in again to check. Did I check it right the first time? To check, did I check, did I check? It just went on like that. And the same with doors. So it would take me ages to actually and pull away. And to this day, I would still feel those thoughts coming to me, but I'm able to control them.
Okay.
Within reason, like, I might only check it once now, and then I'll say to myself, stop now, it's locked, or it's off, you know.
Yeah.
And I find to get out of the house and go quickly, that is best. But if I'm waiting on someone to give me a lift, they don't know, but if they're late, it's check back in. I'd have to really fight with myself then. It's, you know, it's so hard to explain.
Well, you're explaining it very well. And on the one hand, as we explained, as it was, we had another case, another issue yesterday with intrusive thoughts as a form of OCD. The OCD can take a number of manifestations, i.e. Perpetual cleaning and obsession with cleanliness and repetitive cleanliness and intensive cleanliness and using bleach and awful, as we heard over the last few days. And then there's the intrusive thoughts, and that is when you think you've left the iron on or you've left the door open. And in terms of three, or in your case, if you don't get up and touch the jewellery gifted to you by your mother and grandmother, that some harm would come to them.
Oh, yeah, that they would die. As a child, that is the one distinct memory I have. I was 10 when I first remember. 9, 10, anyway. And I remember, particularly if I didn't touch it, like, and then if I couldn't find a jewelry, I can still see the little wooden jewelry box. And if I couldn't find a particular bit of jewelry, I'd be there rooting in the middle of the night trying to find it. They'll die if I don't find it and touch it. That is, I know it sounds crazy.
No.
But that is the way it was. And, like, I didn't know at the time. I remember, like, I didn't speak to anyone about it as a child. It's only in the latter 10, 15 years when I was going to council, but totally different, that this came up. And they said that this was definitely, that they had seen the signs of obsessive compulsive disorder in me. Like, but because it didn't manifest the way I heard about it, the most common way is definitely the cleanliness, which I was probably bad enough on, but not like constantly washing my hands till they were raw. I know somebody who had that, like. It was more that I would have these thoughts. And you just learn. Now, the way I've learned nowadays is to, the minute it like happens to me, I will replace it with some positive thought.
Okay.
You know, into my head. And it's like I've a peaceful life now. I mean, I'm able to control it. You know what I mean? It's only occasionally it comes in. As I said, particularly if I'm waiting for someone to collect me or something. But nothing like it used to be.
What helped you calm it down and dilute it, Carol?
I have to now say years of counselling, probably, because I think it's signs of other things that are there. I feel myself that while it is a disorder in itself, it's often in line with extreme anxiety and things like that. It seems to coexist with other conditions. And as they, and I was dealing with them, I suddenly realised, oh, such a thing doesn't happen as much anymore. If you get me, it was like a gradual, I'm not constantly going back in to check things are off. I check it's off once now, but I still remember the feeling, you know, and knowing each time I went back in that I was like a crazy lunatic going back in, opening and knocking everything to check inside, the same things all over again. You know, it's like you can't convince, and feeling then if I didn't keep checking, something terrible would happen. not maybe to, it didn't, wasn't like a particular person with the jewellery, it was the person that gave me the jewellery.
Yeah,
I distinctly remember as a child that they would die if I didn't do this. I mean, talk about a total intrusion in your head, like, I mean, what, when you think about it now when I'm older and my, you know, it's all kind of much more rational.
But it is very real, and you're not, Carol, you're not alone. As you've heard over the last few days, like Mella was yesterday talking about these intrusive thoughts, and she'd be sometimes walking away in the kitchen with her knife, and she'd be looking around to see, she would convince herself that she'd injured somebody in the process.
Yeah, she then, I heard that yesterday.
And then she said when she was out driving, if she hit a bump or a pothole, she'd convince herself that she had run over somebody and would drive back once, twice, three, sometimes four times to check.
Yeah.
And then
I
we had
totally understand that.
Then we had, and the reason I'm retailing this is to say you're not, to remind people they're not alone. We had John then tell us that he, in his case, he related to what Mella was saying about the bump on the road. And he said he actually, I don't know many times this, he would drive back to check, to check, to check. And he said one night he's lying in bed thinking of the bump on the road during the day, which he had checked and double checked and triple checked and quadruple checked. But he got up out of bed, got a flashlight, got back into his car, I presume in his night gown or whatever, drove to the spot where he felt the bump, got out of the car with the flashlight and searched the ditch because he was convinced he had hit somebody and they might be still lying in the ditch.
Yeah.
So it is incredibly powerful. The nature of these intrusive thoughts.
Yeah, when I look back on it now, I mean, you kind of say to yourself, my God, why did I keep doing it over and over? Mm. You know, why? Because now that I've been able to deal with it so much better, it doesn't, as I said, it doesn't, I could never say it, they will never come into my head.
Yeah.
They all do come into your head, but my way of dealing with them is totally different. I almost say to myself, stop that now. It's like, it's hard to explain, but you just have more control. They control those thoughts. When I was bad, would have controlled me the same as those other callers are saying. They controlled you, those thoughts. And you felt like that man felt he had knocked it. They are there. The same as I felt they will die. I have got to touch it. No matter if it takes me all night to find this, I have to do it. So those thoughts controlled me, even as a child particularly. And right through until about 10 years ago. I'd say the last 10 years have been, I have gone back in control. And that's why I believe that with counselling. I also read up. I would read an awful lot and I read about it and realised, lots of people. And I realised that just because I didn't constantly wash my hands didn't mean I didn't have OCD. I thought, I mean, I was proud of the fact that I was the member of my family who didn't have it.
Yeah.
But I actually had
We heard from Mella yesterday, it is in the family, but it was different manifestations. Was it in your family, Carol?
Yeah, my mother and my brother. Yes, definitely. You know, it is, and as I said, I definitely feel it coexist a lot of time with anxiety. Think about it.
Yeah.
It's a form of being over anxious, like when you have, but it just gets out of control and these thoughts start to control you. And they are thoughts to a rational person. I'm sure if they were listening, they'd be thinking, what? You don't touch it, someone die. You know, I can understand how they must feel, you know, thinking, but it's normal to a person that's going through it, if that makes sense at the time. It's part of everyday life. And I mean it was everyday life. It wasn't just once in a blue moon. It was everyday life, where now the thoughts are not everyday at all. They're just fleeting occasionally. And I am aware of them. It's been so self-aware as a counsellor on me. I'm aware of when they're coming in and think, stop it. But years ago, they were just totally in control. They were daily.
And you do recognise them as intrusive thoughts. And you say to them, get away, get off, get lost.
Yeah, you know, Yeah, you would. You'd almost talk to yourself and say, stop that. Or quickly think of something. I always feel replace a negative with a positive is great anyway.
Yeah.
So to replace with something, I find that works. And it was for all those years, I was kind of thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? But I never spoke to anyone about it, even though I probably knew there was something like. But when your show this week, it's like you're like, oh, why didn't I know all those people years ago? That's what I started thinking. Why? You know, there's so many people coming onto the show that seem to have had, you know, some form of it. And it's actually, and I remember the counsellor telling me, it's so common. My form, it was just more the thought was slightly less common, you know, the fear of someone dying, of being touched something, the other one is more common, but it is a form of OCD, like, okay, as I was told.
Of course. But you were not alone, Carol. That's the message, and it can be hopefully faced head on. And the stories we've heard from each and every person since Monday, one, they've been shocking in many ways, but two, they've all confronted and to a greater or lesser extent, I think to a greater extent, moved on. And even Al yesterday, Al at the end of the programme. And he spoke about attending, just to identify him for listeners, he spoke about attending in outpatient sessions in St. Patrick's Hospital in Dublin. I'll mention the point about the number of thoughts we have, and I was reading about this last night. Apparently the number of thoughts we have a day can be in the region of 60,000. Okay.
I don't
ask me who counted them, Carol. And what he it's like the first fella who was milked a cow. What did he think he was doing? But anyway, someone has counted the number. But Carol, 85% of our daily thoughts of 60,000 are negative, believe it or not. Are negative. Worry or stress or hearing bad news or whatever. But anyway, Carol and Galway, Carol, thanks indeed. And stay strong and well done and facing, and also well done and talking to other listeners
and
today.
And thanks for giving us the platform, Joe, to do it.
That's
what
the programme is for, Carol. Go to Mina Maga, that's Carol in Galway. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Ashley O'Connor. Ashley is in Connor and contacted us in Cavan. Sorry, Ashley O'Connor in Cavan, talking about her children with autism who are off the waiting list. Now, Carol, I have to remind you that the moratorium kicked in at 2 o'clock today, so we cannot discuss in any shape or form the referendums tomorrow, Ashley. But tell us your situation, Ashley, please.
Hi, Joe. I have three children, two of which have already received their diagnosis of a mixture of autism. They both have autism. One has ADHD and my middle boy has DCD, and we're waitlisted for my youngest daughter as well for an autism diagnosis. So we're a fairly busy family, and they're great kids, but you know, it's, I suppose, I contacted yourself in regards to the services or lack of, I suppose, that we receive here, and I'm sure it's across the country, it's not just in County Cavan, but obviously the experience we've had is here in Cavan, you know, with the services, and I suppose really, I contacted him regards my eldest boy, who has been struggling a lot lately. Okay. And the school have asked for a mehl meeting. And this is where they kind of get all the services together, everyone that's, you know, involved in your child, and get them all together around one table to kind of discuss your child and see how best to help them. When we kind of looked at maybe doing this is what he needs, we actually realised, like, my son has no services. He's not with anybody. Mm-hmm. And we looked into, he had been with CAMHS. They had referred him to, which they had been since the time he was born, really, he's been referred back and forth between CAMHS and Enable Ireland in Cavan. And any parent with a child with a dual diagnosis will know that you can't be with both services. They will pass and swap and change you from one service to another.
Okay, I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, they very, I don't know whether it's a rule or whether it's just something that they pass you off and say, no, look, your child's needs are mainly with ASD here. You need to be with the child development team. Or then if you're with the child development team, they say, look, no, the ADHD is more prevalent. We need to send you to CAMHS. Mm-hmm. But we had been back and forth anyway, and then a referral was sent for my son to be seen by Enable Ireland in 2020.
Okay.
And that referral was sent and received by them, as much as I know anyway. And in 2022, I had contacted Enable Ireland in regards to my middle boy who had not received any services also since his time of diagnosis. And I had questioned about my eldest son and said, look, what's the story here? You know, it's 2 years has passed since he was referred, and they told me that they didn't have any record of him on their waiting list at that stage. During those 2 years, Enable Ireland had moved from being Enable Ireland and the CDNT to this Progressing Disability Services. And I was told by the manager then at that stage that he had been lost off the system in the amalgamation of the two.
Okay.
So I, you know, was quite upset by this, and I had gone, got the referral letter again from CAM. Luckily, they still had it on file. I hand-delivered it back into Enable Ireland in 2022. And last Monday, again, as I said, the school were looking to do this meeting, and I said, oh, I'm going to contact, you know, he has to be up at the top of the list by now. You know, this is almost 4 years. He has to be nearly there. To be told that, again, they had for the second time lost my child off their waiting list. And
what,
it's
well, what's of your two eldest? What services have you managed to access, either in terms of school or what help have you got, Ashley?
So since diagnosis, for my eldest boy, the only thing we have received was through CAMS, and it was just, it's called an ADHD clinic where you go in, they weigh them, they write you a script, and you're out the door. There's no much more than that. We did eventually, after 9 months of waiting, after my son was having suicidal thoughts, was very, very down and depressed. Now, at this stage, he was 11.
Okay.
That we had to wait 9 months, and he received play therapy after 9 months. And then, so that was all my son, my eldest boy, has received since his diagnosis at 6 years of age. He's now 13 now. And then my middle boy, who is nine, he was diagnosed in 2019 and has never been seen for his DCD. And then in 2020, he was diagnosed with autism. And he's received just a handful only last summer of OT appointments. And that's been it.
To Enable Ireland wouldn't come on, but they did send us a long statement. We acknowledge that the high level of vacant posts in our CAVIN team poses a challenge to meet the demands on the service and causes long waiting times for children. But how long are the waiting times in reality?
Well, as I said, we have been waiting. So my eldest son actually waited 7.5 years through primary care for an OT appointment. But through Enable Ireland in CAVIN, we're now waiting 5 years for physiotherapy.
And they're five, critical years.
Absolutely. Like, my son had an OT assessment done in February there, and he scored on his ABC movement, which is an assessment they do for children with DCD, and he scored the 1st percentile. So you actually, like, it's in the severe range. You can't get any, you know, he can't struggle any more than what he's struggling right now. And I was told that he's not complex enough to receive any physiotherapy appointments in Enable Ireland.
And Enable Ireland also say, we take any complaint of a missing file very seriously and would respond to such a complaint as a matter of urgency. We want to reassure parents that where a parent raises a concern or a complaint, it will be contacted directly by the service and will be followed up on. Have you raised it? I presume you have, Ashley.
So, yeah. So on Monday last week, as soon as I had heard that there was no record of my son for the second time, I immediately asked to speak to the manager. I said, like, this cannot happen. And I was told, look, I couldn't directly speak to her, that they would contact her and they would leave a message. I phoned the following day, and because I was told the manager would actually be, there is no actual manager in situ in CAVIN. They're actually based in the Navan branch of Enable Ireland. So I was told that the manager would be in the centre on the Tuesday, and I rang again then on the Tuesday. I, you know, spoke with the secretary, and she actually had verbally told me that she again, verbally spoke to the manager about my son's case and the fact that he had gone missing twice off their waiting list. And I had to wait until this week to have a verbal phone call conversation. And that was not with the manager. It was because apparently the manager has gone out on sick leave.
That can
and then
happen,
the person
yeah.
who and was what? Put in place of her has gone on sick leave. And now I spoke to this other person.
So what's the future hold, insofar as you know? And by the way, the future is a ticking clock, unfortunately, for
Absolutely.
That for your age group. But what does the future hold?
It's very much dependent. Like, a lot of children with additional needs, as every parent would know, like, early intervention is absolute key to helping your child to, you know, to grow and to be able to, you know, live as best they can in society and to, you know, to, I hope, like, my kids will, you know, someday get mm-hmm. jobs and to have their own family. And, you know, that's what I hope for them. But I can't do that on my own. And I'm, you know, because you do so much for them. And a lot of the time we get phone calls where, you know, you have to come to school, collect them, or they don't want to go to school, or we've had a bad day. So, like, I've been on carers for my kids, and I can't afford to keep paying private assessments, you know, because they run from 1,000 to 1,500 per assessment. And now I have three children looking at different assessments, and it's all a big fight, you know, to try and get a writing assessment when you need to have, you know, assistive technology in school, to have an educational assessment when... Yeah. The schools say that there's dyslexia there. Everything costs 1,000 or 1,200 or 1,500. And on any family, that's a huge amount of money when these services are supposed to be there. They're supposed to help our children and they're not.
What toll is this taking on you, Ashley?
Oh, Joe, it's tough. Like, to be honest, like, after last week, I cried my eyes out because I feel like I'm failing my kids. You know, I can't afford to give them everything that they need if I have to pay for privately. I have to choose between each of them who needs it right now. And, like, that's a huge, huge effect on my mental health.
Oh, my God.
It's, you know, I'm exhausted. You know, you don't sleep because you're sitting up, you know, you're worrying about them constantly. And, they don't see this, you know. It's just more needs to be done for kids in Ireland with additional needs. The services just aren't there.
Yeah. Okay, Ashley, I have a load of supplementaries, but I don't want to stray outside the borders of the moratorium. Ashley O'Connor, thank you so much. And we'll keep in touch after tomorrow and beyond, Ashley. Thank you so much. That's Ashley O'Connor in Cavan. Joe at rt.ie 51551. It's the text number
0818 715 815. Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Laurie, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe? All right?
Good. You call yours aggressive OCD. What does that mean, Laurie?
Well, I didn't say actually aggressive. It's severe OCD I have.
I was
listening to a lady yesterday on the radio, and I could relate to some of her things, but mine I find would be a lot more worse. I would constantly wash my hands, like, and I would get in the bath and get out of the bath and fill it again and get in it again.
And what age when this started?
It started when I was 14, when I was 14 in school. It started off, you know, I was in school and I was at the getting demmed for the first time in school. Mm-hmm. And this is where the doctor said it stemmed from. So when I came out of the toilet, I had a big girl, I was sixth class, that also brought me to the toilet, as you do. But when I came out of the toilet, she says to me, now make sure you wash your hands well because they carry germs.
Okay.
Now at such a young age, I was 12 and my body was changing, obviously. And when she said that, I then thought I had a disease. So it obviously the seed planted then, and then I kept thinking of germs and that I was dirty all the time and that I have to clean everything and that I will contaminate someone else then with a disease. So that's where it started from. Now, as I said, I grew out of it. You know, I started to grow up and, you know, you keep yourself busy then. as you're growing up, and it kind of left me. But then different rituals came along that I had to do certain things. There was a stage where I had to, you know, when you know the lines on the road?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Cracks, you know, I had to jump over the fifth, I had to jump over the fifth one. Like,
The fifth line.
Yeah, it was fifth. Yeah. It was four.
Yeah.
It had to be an even number.
Yeah.
And as then it changed then to five.
Okay.
And then that one changed. I didn't do that one anymore. It went from, I still check all the doors and make sure they're locked, and I check and make sure all the gas is off, that everyone is on zero. Even though I know I'm after checking everything at night time, I still, to be in the bed saying, I didn't check that right, even though I know I did. And I'm like, Wendy, or Larry, you checked it.
Yeah.
And I'd get back out of bed and go down and check it all again. I'd exhaust myself. But now I'm a bit older and my patterns have changed. As in, now I constantly wash my hands. I would put my pyjamas on me. And if I haven't got a good thought in my head when I'm putting my pyjamas on, I will take them back off. So I'm constantly exhausting my own body.
Yeah.
Now, I did go to a doctor and they just want to give you medication.
Yeah.
And I've tried myself to do it, you know, mind over matter, and, you know, tried to change my thinking, done a bit of meditating. I don't drink much alcohol. I don't drink really at all because I was thinking, even if I did drink once a week, I thought maybe the alcohol, even though it's only once a week, that's not good for the mind. So I've cut all that out and it's still there. It's still there. You know, I'm 43 now, and I don't want. I've done enough. I have it since I'm a young age, and it's just got worse with age.
Yeah. And Larry.
And I just hit. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
When you said, like, if you had a bad thought when you're putting on your pajamas.
Yeah.
And how would you? So you take off the pajamas? Is that it?
I take them off. I take them out and put them back on. Sometimes I put them on the fifth time. It has to be five. Now, I'm being honest with you, Joe. If I see someone, I'm very aware of what I'm doing.
Okay.
And I'm very aware of my own mind. I'm a very strong-minded person. And that's the sad thing about it. Like, it breaks my heart. I'm like, Wendy, why can't you just be normal? And I am normal in so many ways.
Yeah.
But, and I'm affecting everyone around me at this stage, you know.
But, Larry, you're not alone.
I know. Well, you know, to be honest with you, not many people understand OCD. You hear people saying, I have OCD, I had to make my beds this morning, I had to fix my cushions on the chair.
Yeah.
I'd be so frustrated that I'm like, you know what, I wish that was, sorry for the language, I wish that was my OCD because I would have little to complain about. But it just consumes me life at this stage now. It's affecting me and my loved ones around me. And it's heartbreaking to think that all the, like, if you have got, you decide you can put you on a tablet and it will help. I did try that. I did try it. And my personality wasn't the same because I'm an outgoing person.
Yeah.
And I felt it was suppressing who I was, you know.
Mm.
And I was groggy all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't even know what I was saying.
And now, Laurie, what sparks it now? What sparks?
Well, it's stress. Stress, I think. The doctor said stress brings it on.
Well, are you, for example, are you over the pyjama?
No, I still
ritual.
Do that.
Still do that. Okay.
No,
okay.
I still do that. I still
do
that.
There's nothing. Now, remember.
And I don't. Sorry, this is the thing I was saying, Joe. I was just, when I heard those two people on the radio yesterday, I actually said to myself, about time you hear someone talking about this, because this is not very well known.
Yeah.
It's not very much talked about. And sometimes I'd be ashamed to tell anyone, like, I have. Now, my family know. And they're understanding. They know what I have, but they don't really know what it is. Like, they ask me, what is it? And I don't want to tell them what way my thoughts can be, because I don't want to upset them. But when I heard them on the radio yesterday, I was overwhelmed. And I said, you know what? I'm not on my own. There is people out there the same. Do you know what I mean? But the pyjamas, but it's not about putting the pyjamas on and off. It's just, it's exhausting every day.
Yeah.
Like, even before I get up in the morning, I say to myself before I go up, now, Wendy, please don't start. Don't start doing this to yourself again. Because like that in the morning, I'd end up in the bathroom, I'd brush the teeth, I'd brush my teeth, but I have to put toothpaste on the tooth. I put the toothpaste on the toothbrush, brush my teeth five times. I rinse it, do it again. Has to be five.
Yeah.
Five. So I'm punishing myself because I'm making my gums sore.
Yeah.
And then with washing my hands, I'm turning the tap on, off. It's like I'm playing a tune with the taps because I'm nearly pulling the taps off the sink now this way because I have to turn it off, turn it on, turn it off, turn it on five times. my hands are raw, and my body is actually strenuous with stress because I'm exerting myself. You know, sometimes if I go up the stairs at night and if I don't have a good thought in my mind, I'll go back down and I'll do it 5 times. I don't know how I'm not like Slim Shady. I'll do it 5 times. I'm not joking you. I'm very aware, but it's also so sad, you know. And by talking, when I heard them yesterday, it just made me feel so at ease. And now I'm not afraid to talk. Yeah. Not embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed to talk about it.
Laurie, it's not going to kill you.
I know.
Don't be so afraid of it.
I know.
A lot of people go through it, and a lot of people come through. I know. But don't be afraid of it. Don't try not to panic. You know what's wrong? What's wrong with putting? You know, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with putting on your pajamas 5 times. You're not mad. There's so many people are affected by this.
I went to actually see a psychiatrist, Joe.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I did, because I said to my doctor, I said, I'm coming, like, all the years with doctors, and I'm like, no, I want to speak to somebody. I want to ask them, am I okay? Like, why am I doing this behaviour? And I went to see a psychiatrist, and they done an assessment. They rang me back about 3 days later.
Yeah.
And they said to me, I'm actually too well for the service, for their services.
Okay.
And they said that I need to do a bit of counselling.
Yeah.
And obviously, now I'm doing a bit of counselling at the minute.
Well done.
Yeah. And it's, but it's not really helping with the OCD, you know.
Well, it will. Don't.
I hope my phone's not gone off.
Yeah, you're fine. You're still there. Yeah, I am, Larry.
Yeah, you're still here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get
caught. How do you manage, given that you're worried about things? How do you, and bad thoughts? I presume you can't watch the news.
I do not watch the news. Oh,
okay.
I do not. I couldn't.
Okay.
I couldn't, because it disturbed me mind. I try my best to be positive. I stay around positive people. If I hear someone even talking negative, I get out. I can't listen. I just tune out and go away. Because that affects me. That will make me. That will trigger me off. You know, and if I was in someone's home.
Yeah.
And there's someone said something at the table about what was on the news, and it was something bad, I straight away would go up to their sink and start washing my hands 5 times.
Five times.
I don't.
Okay.
It's crazy. It's like I have to do it to wash the tar away, and then everything will be okay. I won't get any peace or any ease in my stomach or my mind until I do that.
Because is it the same thing? Sorry, no two cases are the same in that sense, or experiences. No, let's not call it a case. It's an experience. Carl was saying that she'd have to get up and touch. She had to touch her mother or granny's jewellery that they gifted her, otherwise something bad would happen. Are you washing your hands 5 times because you think the negative thoughts might affect you?
No, or any of my family.
Any of your family.
So
okay.
If I don't do that, if I'm in bed and I know I'm after washing my hands, and I'm like, Wendy, you better go to bed. You better wash your hands. I'm like, no, I'm not doing it. And you better, because then I think something bad is going to happen. I don't even like saying that, but that's the way my head is. So I go up then and I do it again, and I have to do it 5 times, and if anybody interrupts me while I'm doing it, I have to start again.
Okay.
Like if I hear someone on the news saying say something about cancer, bless yourself, I bless myself and I touch wood, but I will wash my hands because I'm afraid that I'll get it.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. It sounds crazy, and I'm very aware of it. And it's very sad to think that this is, obviously, the mind is so fucking strong. You know, the way the mind moves is in mysterious ways. But I have to do it, or I will not get any peace.
Okay.
And the only rest I get from it, to be honest with you, is when I'm in bed.
Okay, when you're in bed. Okay, Laurie, stay with us, because from what you're saying, from what you're saying, from what I've heard over the last few days, and you're so aware of, you're so understanding of it, I think you're halfway there. Okay, Stephen Moran after this break, 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Laurie, you're still there. And I want to go to Stephen, Laurie. And Stephen, if I can with you, I want to start with where we are now. Is that, hopefully that's not your lap, neither lie. Stephen, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
Okay.
How's it going?
How are you now?
Yeah, I'm in a good place now.
Great.
It took a long time, a lot of kind of educating myself, and I always say a lot of ups and downs. It's a bit of a fight to kind of get to a place where you're managing OCD well. I'm in a good place now, Joe. Yeah.
Okay. What's the dog's name?
The dog's name is Hazel. She's giving out here because I'm on the phone.
Hazel, will you go in and watch telly or something, Hazel, for a minute? Anyway, Stephen, so you're a good place now. And I'm especially trying to get people to address Laurie's situation, and she's fed up, to say the least. When did it start for you, Stephen? How did it manifest itself, your OCD?
Yeah. So I when I look back, I was diagnosed in 2018. I reckon I was really suffering bad with it from about 2015.
Okay.
So I didn't know what it was. It was I was being treated kind of for GAD, which is generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay.
So a lot of the parts of GAD would be similar, but OCD is very much a very unique kind of, I suppose, mental health illness. So when I got diagnosed in 2018, a lot of it started to make sense because it was very, very strange thoughts. Now, I'm listening to that girl, Laurie, was it just the last girl?
Yeah, Laurie said that, yeah.
I can, my heart just goes out to her because I can relate to pretty much everything that she's talking about, right? I can relate to the hand washing. So to put it into perspective, when I'm talking about OCD, a bit like Laurie, I want people to kind of understand what it is and not what they think it is, right? So an example of somebody with the contamination OCD and washing their hands, the reason that they're washing their hands is because they think that something awful is going to happen if they don't wash their hands a certain amount of times or for a certain amount of time. And for me, my fear was passing on an illness or a disease to somebody else, and it was particularly after going to the toilet. So somebody without OCD will go, oh my God, that's mad. You kind of just wash your hands and everything's okay. But with OCD, the worries are manifested, like multiplied by 1,000. You actually believe that you haven't washed your hands properly and you're going to pass on something to somebody else by, say, touching them or you know, just shaking their hand. And that fear is so real, especially in the early days when you don't really know what's going on. So I can completely relate listening to that. My heart goes out where it really does, like, you know. So that was one way it manifests with me. I can also relate to the hit and run OCD, where you drive, you think you've hit somebody. Even though, and the rational side of you, Joe, is telling you, you didn't, you know you didn't. But the OCD is so powerful and so strong, it's making you believe that you did. And I would sometimes drive around and around and around to the same spot for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and even be looking that night on my phone to see if there are any police reports that somebody has been knocked down. And it's 24/7, it's 365, and again, like Laurie, my break was going to bed. My break was going to sleep, you know. So my heart goes out to her now. It really does. I can hear the frustration, and I can hear the sadness, and she sounds really worried that it'll be like that forever. I will hopefully want to give a little bit of hope that it doesn't have to be forever. There is hope with this, and it's getting finding a proper OCD counselor, psychiatrist, getting on the right medication. It's a bit of trial and error with the medication. And then it's a case of, you know, you've got to, it's digging deep and believing in yourself that this is irrational. I can beat this. And as you said a few minutes ago, it's not a one-way fix for everybody. It just isn't. But I think you just kind of find your way by kind of not giving up. And I don't mean that in a cliched way of saying not giving up, but you really have to dig deep. I actually came across a book, Joe, called Brain Lock, and I found that amazing. It was kind of telling me to label OCD for what it is, nearly calling it out for what it is, and I found that really worked for me. Nearly having an attitude towards it. So when you're having a really bad OCD moment, for me, what worked was, and it was based on the book, I was kind of going, stopping for a minute, kind of taking a breath and going, right, okay, what's going on here? This, you know, this is your OCD. It's not me.
Okay.
It's me OCD.
It's an intruder.
And that kind of
worked. It's an intruder.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's Laurie. I know you're going to counselling. You're going to keep it up, I hope.
I am indeed. Yeah.
Great. And you're not alone. And you heard Stephen there. He's in a good place now. He treats OCD as an intruder and tries to tell it to...
It makes sense, yeah, he's right.
...to get lost.
Yeah.
But Laurie, you sound like you're a joy to be around in one sense, because you say you love the positive stuff and you love, and I'd say you're great to your family as well, because you obviously care so much about them, because you worry so much about them.
This is it. You ask yourself, is that a good or a bad thing? But
as you said,
it is. But I do find as well that music is very good for the mind. You know, my music helps me. You know, if I feel it's overpowered, and if I put music on in the house, I'm clean, and I kind of won't get into the obsession. Do you know what I mean? But that does help.
Have you got Alexa in the house?
No, I don't actually. I've been giving out to Alexa. You sent me out for free by talking on your radio.
I think they're about 20 quid now online. They're brilliant. Already. They're brilliant.
Right,
they're brilliant.
Right. Okay. I'll look into Alexa.
Okay, Laurie.
You're
brilliant. Stay well. That's Laurie and Stephen. Hilary Jones produced, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.